Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Context Machine, episode number 675. I'm Brian Sheffin.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. And this is going to sound crazy, people, but Brian and I, we live in a server on the internet. It's our home, our online home. And you can find it at contextmachine.io.
You can also use contextmachine.io to reach out to us, or you can find us on Mastodon at Context Machine or on Blue Sky at contextmachine.bsky.social.
Nice. And hey, we have a sponsor today. That sponsor is Incogni.
That's fantastic. We're going to tell you more about them later in the show. That's good. You know, so episode 675, it seems like only 5 or 6, 7 years ago that we were doing episode 500.
only 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah. So, right. Let's get to it, because I feel like my blood sugar's falling.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Context Machine, the low blood sugar episode. Yeah, I think mine's starting to drop too. This is going to be great, people.
Yeah, great, great. That's GRATE. This is going to be great. okay. I did a prezo for the Silicon Valley Mancuser Group, SV mug, on Monday, as a matter of fact. And because I am not so good at keeping up on the Apple things, Linda Gusha had... brought me face to face with the Mark Gurman interview, a Mark Gurman interview that he did with some Bloomberg show. And if you know about this stuff, folks, this may not be news, but I found it interesting. And there was one line in particular that turned something completely on its head.
Okay. I'm actually really interested to hear what it is that was said that flipped whatever it is for you right on its head.
So this is the old HomePod with a iPad product that we've been hearing about for years. We were definitely hearing about this the last year or two before Dave and I sold the Mac Observer.
Yeah. So like just to make sure I'm on the same page with you, you're talking about the thing where it's HomePod has a screen attached to it. It's like your home hub device thing. That's what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have struggled to find any interest in that product. I have felt very strongly that this was a product in search of a need, in search of a problem. But Mark Gurman shifted all that for me.
Okay. I'm still very interested.
All right. Yay. So he said, I'm going to quote from this transcript from this interview that he did. I didn't watch this. I've only read it.
Is it a good thing that I'm sitting down? I want to emotionally prepare myself.
I don't know. That seems like a good mode to be in general when you're listening to me, right?
That's a really fair point.
Yeah.
All right, sitting.
Okay, so he says, robotics. That's going to be a big endeavor, tabletop robot, right? Talking about this HomePod with the screen thing. He says, it's a robot. Yeah, so it's a smart home hub. A big iPad-like display on a robotic arm that moves around on your desk and has a personality, right? It's like a companion in your workspace.
Oh, okay. So this is like a revelation for you that this is the idea of what this home hub thing, HomePod thing is going to be, right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Have you seen any of the reports that have come out over the, I don't know, I guess last couple months? Time is a blur right now. Talking about this robotic lamp that Apple has made as a test platform, it's not something that we'll see out in the public, but it ties into this whole thing. You know, they're testing what they can do with robotics in this arm to make it actually a useful thing.
Yes. The reality is that when I've heard this device pitched as a HomePod with a display, that made it sound like an Alexa wannabe thing,
like an Echo Show, but with an Apple logo.
Yeah, and okay. I have no interest in an Echo Show either. But pitching this as a desktop robot companion with a personality, that is a completely different pitch, and it's a pitch that works for me. I live alone. I work out of my house. I would love to have a robot companion. I would love to have something that I was able to interact with when I wanted. Do you remember that little sort of like a bulldozer-y kind of companion robot that it was the racetrack people make that, right?
Yes, and it's one of those things that I'm just suddenly drawing a blank on the name, which is funny because just totally by chance, I played with mine just recently.
It still works?
How does that thing go?
Because they pulled out support for it.
Oh, well, the app is still out there.
Oh, okay.
It still works.
Oh, okay.
The problem that I have with mine is that the battery in it finally just died of old age. But you can get in there and replace the battery if you're brave. Not Cosmo. Osmo?
Osmos. Osmos. Right? Wasn't it Osmos?
Oh, man. What?
Yeah. Cosmo.
It's so Cosmo. I was right. Cosmo.
Yes, you were right. I was wrong. Mark it down your calendar, folks.
This is why I needed to be sitting. Cozmo, Cosmo,
yes.
Like that. Okay.
That was super fun.
Yeah.
And I didn't really, and you know, I I fear that I say that I want this heretofore unannounced, unofficially described device from Apple, and that it's going to sit next to my Apple Vision Pro. Although I've been using my Apple Vision Pro more.
Oh, great. Okay, cool. Yeah.
So, you know, whatever that's worth. Let me take a step back again. Apple, clearly robotics are going to be a huge market for someone. Probably a tech giant, and probably more than one tech giant. You're silent. Do you disagree with that thesis?
Well, okay. So you're talking about like the personal robot space specifically, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, not just the personal robot having devices that can move on their own in some way, that kind of robotics, including personal robotics, including, like, you know, having a robot that does your dishes or,
well, you know, so we have clothes. Robot vacuums right now.
Yes.
And so that would fall in this category.
Yes.
I mean, I guess that's a big market.
Yes. And it's going to become bigger. As companies figure out how to make robotics work and eventually figure out how to make them cheaper, and as AI, and I'm using AI in the machine learning sense, not the generative AI sense, as AI becomes more robust and better, eventually someone's going to be selling us robots.
Okay.
I'm surprised you're not instantly agreeing with that. I mean, like, where is there any hesitation?
The hesitation is that the efforts that have been made so far, and yes, we're talking about things that are very rudimentary, have not really panned out.
That's absolutely true. But I'm talking some point in the future.
Yeah, okay, some point in the future. Well,
at some point in the next 20 years.
So I see the market for the robots that we don't directly interact with, like the robot vacuum. I see things like that continuing to be a market, and a market that will grow. The kinds of robots where they engage with us on a more personal level, it's an area that I find fascinating, and I would love to see that be a big space. But I need to see some products come out that really click with more than just the like bleeding edge tech crowd. And I don't feel like I've seen anything like that yet.
No, not because they don't exist yet. But why would you doubt that they're coming?
Well, I'm not doubting that they're coming. I'm just not convinced today that that's part of the market that will be super successful.
Huh.
I want it to be super successful. I want to have R2-D2 hanging out with me in my house.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like that's kind of what Cosmo was trying to be, but, you know, it wasn't, the technology wasn't there yet.
Yeah, I agree.
But anyway,
it's a fun toy.
I suspect. I mean, this is not like Apple seeing the iPad as the solution to the problem that netbooks were trying to address. That was real crystal ball stuff on Apple's part. I think this is freaking obvious. It's obvious that robotics are going to be a big thing, and it is a matter of when. Well, it's a matter of if civilization ends or not. If civilization doesn't end, robotics are going to be a thing.
Okay, so no pressure there.
Yeah. And Civilization Ending, I'm talking like in the next 6 to 24 months.
Wow, we just went dark.
Yeah. I'm kind of in a dark mood. That's for sure.
Well, okay. So you're clearly excited about the potential for this Apple robot device. And I do think it sounds really interesting. And if it sounds like I've been completely negative on the idea of this being a thing, that's not my intent. It's just where we are today with the technologies. I'm questioning if this, at least for the
you always do this every years. Time Apple comes out with something new, you're like, I don't know, I'll believe it when I see it, and I don't know that I'm going to be interested. You do this every time. Every time.
I do. But in my defense, I'm still waiting for the S Lady to actually be a useful tool.
That is not the exception that proves the rules.
I'm still waiting for HomeKit to become the easy, reliable platform that Apple promised. I'm still waiting for these.
Okay, but AI, you also said this about Apple Watch. I think you said this about iPad. I think you said this about the Apple Vision Pro. I mean, like
you're now making stuff up. I love how crazy
I am. Apple not. Watch.
Okay, so Apple Watch, you're spot on. When I bought the original Apple Watch so that we could review it for Mac Observer, I was certain that after we finished the review in the 14-day window, I was returning the watch.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I'm wearing an Apple Watch Series 8 right now and haven't upgraded it to a newer model is because I don't want to give up the features that Apple can't turn on in the United States currently. And I'm a guy who doesn't like wearing watches, and I've got a freaking Apple Watch on my wrist right now. The iPad, I did see value in that right away, and I was super excited for what I could do with it. And I've been wanting ever since the original iPad came out for it to evolve into something where I could say, if I wanted, that could be my only computer. So I've been positive on iPad. I just wanted to do more still.
Okay.
Yes, on the Apple Watch, yes.
You make yourself feel good. That's fine.
It's all I've got, man, in this dark world. Don't take that from me.
Anyway, back to this device. It's not that I'm excited about this device. I'm not like saying, oh my God, I can't wait for this desktop robot companion with personality to come mm-hmm. into my life. It's more like, huh? Yeah, I could see that. I could see wanting that, and I could see enjoying it. I still cannot see wanting what is it? The Echo Show.
The Echo Show.
Yeah, I don't want an Apple Echo Show at all.
Okay, I can see that. And I have an Echo Show. And
why?
And well, first, I could get it for like, it was one of those stupid sales where it was like $30.
What, I'm why? Like, yeah, okay. Why would you do that?
My intent was to have it sitting on my desk. And at the time, this is when I was living in my old place. And I had external cameras set up. I could have this thing on my desk monitoring the external cameras, and I would have an easy way to be able to watch what was going on outdoors while sitting at my desk. And it's because of the camera systems I was using at the time. Otherwise, it was every time I wanted to look at a camera, it was pick up my iPhone, go to the app, select the camera, and then see what's on it, And so for $30, it was like, oh, I have a super easy to use display for the external cameras. And it turns out that in the end, it's just a clock with a nice display sitting on my desk.
Yeah, I guess my question is sort of evolving into why.
Well, I had a use case for it. That use case has changed, or that use case doesn't exist anymore. But I have found that having that big display with that easy to read clock is actually useful for me. So it has become just a nice clock on my desk.
Yeah. So I mean, but you could get a Nixie tube clock that's large.
Where would I put it?
that's really large and
right
and is kind of clunky to set up, but it looks steampunky and cool. You could do that instead of having an Alexa show.
I could. You know what? You're right. And I feel like I have failed as a tech nerd because I don't have a Nixie clock sitting here on my desk. I apologize to everyone for my transgression.
That's fair. By the way, I've got two links for the second part of our show. I've got Nick feeding Excellent. Me stuff while we're talking.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay, Brian. So since I've been Mr. Downer on all this, I do like the idea I find the idea of this robot thing from Apple.
Desktop robot companion with personality.
There we go. The desktop robot companion with personality. I find this to be a really interesting idea. And so since it can't leave your, it's stationary. It can follow you around with the display.
Yeah.
But it's not like the display can follow you throughout your house. So
right.
the idea of having this in one room is nice yet. But it's nice. The idea is nice. So do you see a scenario where like you have one in your office and then you have one in your kitchen, but it's the same thing. So it's like Hal from 2001 Space Odyssey, where it doesn't matter where you are, it's the same Hal. In this case, it would be the same desktop robot with a personality.
Desktop
and so robotic in that way, it just kind of follows you around it.
With personality. Can you please get that right?
Apple's marketing is going to have to work on the name.
Well, that and this is all based on Mark Gurman's, you know, reporting of, you know, whatever his sources are saying. This is not Apple's marketing.
Right. Okay. And here I am after being Mr. Cranky Butthead about the whole thing, now coming in swinging for you on this one, Brian. The idea of having something that can interact with us and act as a companion of sorts, I find that to be really compelling and potentially really useful, because there are so many people that are in situations where they are isolated, and
yes.
And it could be an emotional isolation. Maybe they aren't able, like physically able, to go out and they're just lonely.
Yep. Or maybe they're like me, where the pandemic exacerbated my natural introvertedness.
Yes, that's a great example. And having something like this where you're interacting with it, and I see a lot of value in that. I mean, the answer for me was I went and got an office manager.
Yeah, well, I've got an office manager too.
You do, but still, I mean, the idea of something like this sitting on the desk in your office, and you're sitting there working on a short story or your next book or whatever, and you can just chat with this and it chats back, or whatever it is that you want it to do. It's sitting there doing it with you and talking to you like both of you are people.
Right. Check this out. This is something I said during the SV Mug presentation, and I heard audible groans from, I didn't see who was doing it, but, because you know, you only see a couple people,
right?
When you're in presentation. Anyway, the point is, definitely someone was like, oh my God, no, I went off in my head on the tangent of, what if this device could watch what we're doing and supply helpful information unasked? I don't think that's going to be the case initially, if ever. But that would be like in that Apple, unless of course the EU makes Apple, you know, stop doing all this stuff on device and, you know, start like specifically uploading it to third-party sites or something, which
make them turn iOS and all the other operating systems into Android.
Yes. But anyway, the point is that with Apple doing its AI stuff on device, I would be okay with an Apple device, at least under current management, on my desk, watching what I'm doing and helping out.
That could potentially be closer than you realize. So back to Amazon and their platform. Amazon showed their A-Lady Plus platform, which rolls out on, I believe, the 28th of this month. And part of what they demoed it doing is being able to pick up on audible cues from you, mm-hmm, as the user and react appropriately. So like if you get up in the morning and you start talking to your Echo and you sound like very sad or depressed, it can pick up on that and respond appropriately.
Yeah, I do not trust Amazon with that power.
So
at all.
But okay, but that's stay on topic here. It's not about it's not about you getting that and trying it today and doing it today. It's about, here's a company that's not Apple in this case, showing this stuff and saying, hey, and we release it at the end of this month. So if they can, if they have this and they release it and it actually really does work in the way they're saying, then this is showing that this is a viable thing that other companies can do, including Apple. So therefore, it's possible that when Apple releases their, say the name for me because you say it so well.
Desktop Robotic Companion with Personality.
Yes, when they release that, part of that personality thing is it can pick up on your moods and respond appropriately. And that's a big step towards what you ultimately want out of something like this. And I think that's actually really cool and really compelling.
Okay, fair enough. And it's interesting too, because we also talked about during this SV Mug presentation, we talked about the and this is something that you and I have talked about, but it's been years. Mm-hmm. Apple's leadership is all aging out. You know, they're all getting to,
right,
to be of an age. Tim Cook will be 65 next year. And so he's either 63 or 64 now. because he could be 63, because if he's turning 65 next December, and I don't know when it is, then that's why next year. Anyway.
Math.
If he was on the board, he'd have to resign. I can't remember if Tim's on the board, but he's not on the board. It's only their board that has that requirement. But you know, almost his entire management team is in their early 60s and heading into the mid 60s, and it is mm-hmm. astounding how stable Apple's leadership has been. You know, I feel like that's one of Apple's greatest success stories, and it's something we don't hear anyone talking about because Apple doesn't make it a thing. Like, we would only be talking about Apple's stability if there was none.
You're right. Also, Tim is on the board of directors.
Okay. Well, he will not be after next year. Unless they carve out an exception. But they made Arthur Levitt, of all people, they made him resign. Well, I mean, he resigned because the board's rules require people to resign at 65. Al Gore resigned.
You mean Arthur Levinson?
Levinson, yes. Thank you.
He's still on the board.
No. Are you looking at the...
I'm looking at Apple's leadership webpage right now. Board of Directors, Arthur D. Levinson, Wanda Austin, Tim Cook, Alex Gorsky, Andrea Young, Monica Lozano, Ronald D. Sugar, and Susan L. Wagner.
Okay.
Oh, but there's a little arrow by Arthur and Andrea. What's that mean? Oh, it's a link out to... That's weird.
What?
There's an arrow next to Arthur's name and Andrea's name, and no one else's. So maybe it means both of them are leaving the board, and instead of actually telling us that, they put a very vague thing that's just an arrow. Oh, wait, got it figured out. If there's an arrow, it's going to an external site for more information about the person. No arrow, then there's an internal Apple page about them. Okay. Yeah, anyhow, Arthur's on the board.
I'm trying to figure out why I lied and said I'm look, because it was something that was in that. Well, anyway, let's just pretend. Let's just wipe that out of existence.
Right. And be sure and wipe out the part where it took me far too long to figure out that the arrow meant that it was an external link and not something on Apple.
Somehow site. I suspect that'll survive.
Yeah. Somehow I think you're right.
Anyway, the point is that something about old people, that's us. We probably need to wrap this up. I did have another angle I wanted to talk about, and that was the delay that Apple has announced on some of its more advanced Apple Intelligence stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way that this desktop robotic companion with personality would not be very dependent on the improved Siri that is one of the things that's been delayed. There's zero chance that this wouldn't be utterly dependent on that improved Siri.
Absolutely. And the other delayed features, I think, would play in to what this device needs to be what it's supposed to be. So until they get that stuff sorted out, I think it would be very difficult for Apple to release this device and not face a late night talk show host making jokes comparing it to a message pad.
Yes. Yes to all that. Apple, we won't see this device until a new and improved Siri comes out.
I agree. Yeah, this is not happening this year.
And then the other thing about this that I wanted to mention is, because I was talking about robotics being a huge market at some point, mm-hmm. at some point in the future. This is an entry-level device to address the robotics market. This would be an entry-level device. You know, eventually, I think one could assume that Apple, there will eventually be an Apple personal robot.
Yeah, I think that's, well, depending on how the market plays out. But yes, I think that's a real possibility.
But you do have to start somewhere. And I mm-hmm. feel, and there have been a ton of robots with personalities. Cosmo just being one of them. And that was what, 4 or 5 years ago?
That was more than that.
Maybe 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, because when that came out,
I think it was
first. You still owned Mac Observer, and second, I was the managing editor.
Yeah. Huh. But anyway, regardless, there have been lots of these devices. None of them are a thing. None of them have become a big thing. And you know, Apple never enters the market early, and they always enter when they think they can do it right. And this would merely be the beginning of other robotic devices from Apple.
I think that's fair to say. And I think part of the reason that products like Cosmo stayed, and you can still buy Cosmo, turns out. I just looked up and, hey, there's a whole website for it. But point is, robots like that, they're not interacting with you directly in the way that you want a personal robot to interact. Those are robots that required you to do at least part of the interaction with your iPhone.
Yeah. Yes. And yes, that's true.
So take that part out of the mix for just your regular interactions. And then that personal robot thing or concept suddenly becomes a lot more compelling.
That's fair. By the way, I'm going to send you a link to one of the newest, Boston Dynamics demo videos. And I want you to welcome our future robot overlords. Be nice. It's pretty crazy. It's basically they've got a robot that's walking and moving, and it's more human like. It's more natural.
Oh yeah, I've seen images of this robot. I haven't actually watched it. Okay. Yeah, that's getting uncanny valley with its movements.
Yes, it is. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes. Is that right?
We will. And when I went to look at never mind. Nope. I'll just stop right there. Save you an edit.
Okay. You're welcome. Thanks.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about Incogni. Right? That seems like a good thing to do. They're our sponsor this week. We love these guys. The angle that I wanted to talk about for this week is people search sites. So these are the kinds of sites where you can you know, put in a name and try to find something out about those people. And I get the desire to do that. But the thing is that other people could do that about us too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this can be a very large data privacy problem. These websites create detailed personal profiles of millions of Americans and publish them online for anyone to see. Major people search sites like Been Verified, that's one word, Been Verified, they provide varied and in-depth records, including information such as home addresses, contact details, license plate numbers, family members, financial information, and even religious and political beliefs. Those looking for more specific details, like court or property records, can also use sites like arrests.org or HomeMeTry. I think that's one. I'm assuming that's how it's pronounced. These sites can expose you and your loved ones to a wide range of dangers, from scams and identity theft to online harassment and stalking. And that's where Incogni can help, because they will send takedown notices. And they will handle all those things for you. I've noticed, by the way, it's been, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks now since I signed up for the account that they provided me. And they have issued 221 formal requests to take down my data. And of those 221, wow, 159 have already come back. They say that I've saved 119 hours and 15 minutes. I would say that's inaccurate, because they've saved me infinite time, because I never would have done it.
There's that. Yeah. Well, and they also know how to do it, so they're much more efficient than you.
Yes.
So there's that too.
You can take your personal data back with Incogni. Use code context at incogni.com/context and get 60% off with an annual plan, right? That's 60% off with an annual plan. Use code context at incogni.com/context. Right?
Nice.
Yes. And so we would like for you to check them out at their website. If you sign up for it, you definitely want to get that extra discount. And we appreciate them sponsoring us.
Yes. Thank you, Incogni.
All right. So, we've got the stuff that Nick is my pen dealer, and Nick is ultimately responsible for Jeff being sucked into the world of fountain pens.
Well, he has been very instrumental in making sure that I stayed in the world of fountain pens. What got me into it was a dear friend who passed away and left some fountain pens to me.
Fair enough. But you also had the ability to talk to me about them when he did that. And Nick, is utterly responsible for me. That's why I'm... Anyway, the point is...
I you know what? Let's give Nick the credit, because he's super cool and super helpful. So thank you, Nick.
Right. What got us to talk about this is the brand Visconti. And why did that even come up? Because that was you.
Okay. Here's how this came up. So, I have my small collection of fountain pens, and I gravitated towards using my Pilot Vanishing Point as my daily driver pen, and it's ultimately, I believe, because it has a gold nib as opposed to a steel nib, and it's a completely different feel, and I just really love it. It's a great pen, but I'm always watching to see what other pens are out there
that you should own.
What other pens are out there that I should? I was going to go with look at.
Yeah, fair enough.
And one of these groups that I follow online, someone was showing their Visconti Homo sapiens pen, and I don't know which Homo sapiens it is, because there's multiple in that Visconti line. But they loved this pen, and I'd heard of the brand, so I started doing some looking and realized, wow, I really, really like how several of these Homo sapien pens look. And so then that led me to talking to you about Visconti, and now here we are.
Right. And I have never used a Visconti. They are gorgeous. What I hear about them is they make great looking pens. They all, like, especially if like you're into cool gadgety type pens. But they have supposedly some really spotty nib quality control issues. So the rule of thumb is, if you're going to buy a Visconti, use it in person before you buy it. And these pens are expensive enough that, I mean, you know, this isn't like, you know, travel across the state to try out a $30 pen. I mean, like, you know, if you're going to pay hundreds or thousands of dollars for a pen, and if it's a Visconti, you absolutely want to write with it before you buy it.
You know, I'm feeling like that's just a good guideline to go by anyhow. But yeah, with the Visconti pens, the ones that I have looked at online, we're talking pens that start over $700.
Yeah.
So like right now, it's something where I'm interested in seeing how the pen feels, not so much in seeing how much it hurts my credit card. I would want to try it.
These are expensive pens. So the two links I just sent you are two pens that Nick is selling.
Okay, so we're looking at a. These are both Schaefer pens.
Yeah,
and I've heard a lot of good things about Schaefer.
Yeah, these are, I believe, older pens.
Yeah, a Nostalgia, solid gold filigree overlay fountain pen with a 14 karat gold nib.
Yep,
and then
so that one looks like those 120 year old pens that I bought from Nick that had the rubber bodies.
Yes, which is not rubber in the way most people are thinking.
It's
very hard.
Yeah, it's before there was plastic, there was this. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I was instantly struck by the fact that these reminded me of those pens. But you'll note that the one has a 14 karat gold nib, and the other one has an 18 karat gold nib. And we'll have links to these in the show notes if you care. We'll also have a link to the Visconti site.
Yep. Yep. And just for comparison, the Vanishing Point, the Pilot Vanishing Point that I use all the time, that's an 18 karat gold nib.
Right. And I know enough about pens to know that, I know for a fact that for people who are really into pens, that gold nibs are absolutely the preferred standard. And it's not because they're gold. It's not like people wanting gold just because it's gold and that way they can say they've got a gold pen or a gold nib.
Right.
It's there's something about the way gold exists and is that that makes for a smoother writing experience. And okay. I would absolutely say that my favorite pens have all tended to have gold nibs.
Okay, that's actually something I wanted to ask you about, since you have more experience with fountain pens than I do, because you've been using them a lot longer. I noticed that the pens in my, granted, small collection that I gravitate towards are the pens that have gold nibs.
Yeah.
To me, they feel different than the steel nib pens. And that's even if I'm using the same ink in the gold tips versus gold nibs versus the steel nibs, I can feel a difference in the nibs. And so thank you for validating me on that, because I wasn't sure, am I really feeling something different, or is it because I know that one nib is steel and the other is gold, and so I'm making myself think that it feels better? But
it does
feel better.
Maybe you are, but maybe you aren't. And I don't know why gold is supposedly better. I just know that that it is, generally speaking, regarded as the best nib. And the problem is that gold hit over 3,000. I'm going to check the current price of gold. As of last night, it was over $3,000 per ounce. And wow, that makes gold nibs ever more expensive.
Yeah.
Gold, the ask, wow, the ask as of this writing, as of this speaking, is $3,068 to 23 cents. And silver is up to 3410. A lot of uncertainty in the world.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
So, yeah. Anyway, we did find some very gorgeous Visconti pins, and I would love to own one. I don't. But if I was going to buy one, I would definitely try it in person.
Yeah, I want to try one in person. So now I'm wondering if the amazing pen and paper shop that's in Boulder, Two Hands, mm-hmm, if they have a Visconti.
Don't they have a website?
Geez. Two Hands Papery. There it is. Why, yes, they do. And they have an excellent selection of inks as well. And I have to say, I've been really surprised with how different inks can feel in the same pen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes,
I mean,
yes,
I
yes,
knew there would be a difference. I just didn't realize how big of a difference.
The paper you're writing on also matters.
Yes. I've had to change the notebooks that I use on my desk because of my fountain pens.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I did not expect that. So now on my desk, instead of having a Moleskin notebook, uh-huh, which I think are great notebooks,
person forever.
Yeah, but with a fountain pen, there's too much variation in their paper quality to make it work well for fountain pens reliably.
Did they get bought by a private equity company?
No, it's just their thing. Yeah. But I think their notebooks are great for other types of writing instruments. So I'm now using Baron Fig notebooks at my desk. Hmm.
I don't even know them.
That's another link I'm going to have to.
Yeah, please do. Share it with me too.
And in here.
By the way, I did find a pen that I don't want. That's the Visconti Checkmate. I just sent you a link to that. It is a chess-inspired pen, and it seems to have little chess pieces sticking out of it. I don't know what the heck that's about. because
it, oh, wow,
if you scroll down the bottom, these start at 6,200 euros. That's for the rollerball pen is 6,200 euros. The Checkmate fountain pen is 6,500 euros, and I don't know what the deal is with these pieces sticking off of it. That doesn't make any sense.
I wonder if that's a sleeve on the pen.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't want it. I found a pen I don't want. 6,500 euros.
Now I'm glad I'm sitting down.
It's a ridiculous pen that does things that no one needs and no one asks for, and I somehow don't want it. So this is what Nick meant about cool gadgety type pens. The pens that we were looking at, the Van Gogh and the Homo sapiens, they're just mm-hmm, they're just functional pens.
Yeah. Yeah, the Homo sapien that I was looking at, that just, it looked super sharp to me. It was the Bronze Age, and there was another one in that same line, the Dark Age.
I don't remember them.
So the black pen that had the brass touches on it.
Yeah.
That's the Bronze Age. And then the Dark Age, it's same pen, but the accents are this really dark, sleek looking.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Metal.
Yeah. So if there are any pen users listening to us, I'm assuming that most people still listening to us must be pen users.
Hi, Barry.
I would love to hear about your thoughts on the gold nib versus the steel nib thing.
And me too.
You can write to us at contextmachinepodcast@gmail.com, or you can write to us you can write to me at GeekTales. I'm GeekTales everywhere. Jeff is Jay Gamet.
Yep, everywhere.
Yep. All right, let's see here. I'm going to do this. And that's this week's Context Machine. Like I said, you can write to us at contextmachinepodcast@gmail.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Dr. Boom, recorded just for this show.
Yes, it is. Hey, and Incogni, thank you for being our sponsor.
Yes, you can take your personal data back with Incogni. Use code context at incogni.com/context for 60% off the annual plan. And that's it for this week. Definitely top men.